welcome to the Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 202. I'm Graham, and I'm here with Andrew and Sean, and this time joining us is Jerry. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
So, all right, first we'll start with the news, and it seems like there is big news, at least right now. PSN is back online.
Yay.
No more complaining.
Not exactly.
Well, hi.
You know, PSN is back. The store isn't back yet, and that's my favorite part. But the problem here is that they announced this welcome back package, which I thought was fairly generous. Like, it's more than I thought they were gonna give. But people were really complaining about the welcome back package.
Well,
because the ones that support Sony to begin with kind of already have everything.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. So for people who don't know, what they're doing is they're allowing PS3 users to get two of these five games. Little Big Planet, Infamous, Wipeout HD plus Fury, Super Stardust HD, and Dead Nation. And I guess the problem people have is they bought all five of the games, which I'm kind of surprised by, because generally it seems like these are games where not all five would appeal to you.
Yeah, it's a decent variety. You know, they're not brand new games, but I mean, nobody expected them to be.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about their MO, it seems like Sony was trying to give as much as possible, or look like they're giving as much as possible, while giving no one something they were going to buy anyway.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, that's fair. That's something they're going to do, you know. And I personally think it's a pretty good lineup. You know, they're giving away two full retail games, and they're giving away some PSN games. But, you know, of course, it's not my ideal lineup. You know, I wouldn't mind, you know, for example, I know in Europe they're giving away Ratchet and Clank. That's pretty cool. And we're not getting it. But in Germany, for the PSP, you can get Hot Shots Golf. But no, that's just me wanting Hot Shots Golf. But already on four of them.
I would take Hot Shots Golf over half of the PSP games.
Yeah, the PSP lineup does seem a little weak. Little Big Planet for the PSP is pretty good. I mean, it's not as good as the PS3 version, but it's a pretty good game. Mod Nation Racers is all right. But generally, it seems like their PSP giveaways are just a lot weaker.
Kind of like, they. I don't know what people expected. I mean, it's a little disappointing seeing it at first, but, I mean, it's free. Free is free. I mean, I don't know. I see no reason to complain. I mean, even if you have all of the games, you know, the fact that they're offering it to people who probably, there's a lot of people who probably don't have half of those games, if not all of them, you know? So, there's some people are going to get some things out of it, so there's no reason, I just don't see the point to complain about it.
Yeah.
And there are people who pretty much went through the entire blackout going, and then the PSN comes back and it's like, hey, free games.
Right. I mean, personally, I don't care that much about online multiplayer. I know that's travesty and all, but I don't care that much, so it hasn't bothered me that much, and I just like free things.
You were just sad. You were just saddened by the lack of the ability to buy games from PS4.
Oh, store. I want the store. I'm still saddened by the store, but I'm hoping, you know, in the next couple of days, maybe even before we get this podcast up. Hey, fingers crossed. I know I was joking with you, Andrew, over the weekend about how we're going to have the podcast and how our main topic was going to be that PSN is back, and then the thing is, it happened. So maybe if I just keep joking about the store being back, it'll be back before I can finish
it. It's going to be back in 10 minutes.
Okay, that works for me.
All right.
Yeah.
Works for me, too.
So if Graham disappears from the podcast in 10 minutes, we'll know why.
Yes. But I think the largest problem why everyone's so mad is because it's been weeks where people have kind of speculated as to what they'd give away. And just any time you have that large period of time to speculate about what could be, you get your hopes up. But I personally am fine with it. One thing I'm interested to see, and they haven't announced it yet, is they're going to do the free rentals on us weekend with movies. And I just think it'll be interesting to see what they think that PSN gamers want to watch.
Spider-Man, of course.
It's got to be Spider-Man 3, doesn't it?
Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man 3.
I bet if it's just you can rent Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, and Spider-Man 3, and that's it. Those are the movies you can watch. Yeah.
I honestly didn't even know about that until you told me, so I don't know how many people are actually going to care. but I guess, you know, more free stuff.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
I mean, it seems like they're either giving away stuff they couldn't sell you, or they're giving away things that they think will make them money later. Like, I don't know a lot of people that rent movies on the PlayStation, but maybe, you know, with this free rental weekend, maybe they can get people doing that.
I have to admit, having Infamous as one of the free games with Infamous 2 out in less than a month is kind of clever.
That's definitely one of the ones I'm grabbing, because I was planning on buying it eventually anyway.
But yeah, so what else is going in the news world? Sean, you know of anything?
Not a lot. The Wet sequel is gone. I know that Andrew will be saddened by this.
yeah, okay.
Considering how much he enjoyed the first one.
Aww.
The first one wasn't bad, it just, yeah. I don't think anybody cared. What about Naughty Bear? Is that sequel still happening? Do we know at all? Do we
care? I know that the gold edition of the first one just was released.
Yeah, today.
I don't know about a sequel.
Gold edition.
Oh,
that's
boy.
A strange game to have a gold edition. I don't know anyone that bought the regular one.
Why would there be a gold edition for that game?
It's
DLC, I guess. Was there a DLC?
Yeah, it's unclear.
It's maybe they fixed all the bugs with it.
Yeah,
it's super cheap though, isn't it? Isn't it like only $15?
Well, I've seen it in clearance everywhere. Like as soon as they got rid of all the clearance copies, let's just make more of them, but call it a gold edition.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're thinking.
People need more Naughty Bear, I guess.
Yeah, well, in some, you know, good games, or at least games some of us really think are good, Rune Factory confirmed for U.S. release.
Yay!
That happened quickly.
I'm actually happy about that one.
Yeah, I've never played a Rune Factory game, so this might be the one I play, hopefully.
Maybe it'll convince me to finally finish Rune Factory Frontiers.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, so that's coming out, and it's, you know, PS3 and Wii, which generally seems like a weird combination of platforms, unless you start thinking that those are the only platforms that matter in Japan. And
pretty much.
Some Move support in that sucker.
Oh yeah,
the Move. They're really behind the Move. These
one-to-one movement.
I want to stroke the cows with real feeling.
I want to water my plants realistically.
Yeah, you should just get a Kinect version of that game where you actually stand up, walk around, and dip your hand as if you had a watering can in it. This is a good idea.
Don't forget using the axe and the hoe. That will be real workout.
Yes.
forget Zumba workout.
Yes, Harvest Moon workout.
You guys are selling me on this, really. No, you're not.
All right.
I think the last bit of news was the new Batman game.
Ah, yes.
Kind of Batman game.
Imposters. I mean, I don't really understand. It seems like a team shooter that just happens to be in Gotham City. Is there anything?
I think Monolith was making a downloadable shooter, and then it teamed up with WB, and WB was like, hey, you should put it in Gotham City, because, you know, the new Batman game's coming out. I'm like, okay. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I don't blame companies so much for doing that. If you just have this game and you can add a license to it and maybe it'll sell better. Just because I like, with the original Medios for the DS, when they put the Disney version, I was okay with that because I know the Disney version sold like 20 times more just because it had Disney on it. And if we can get people who only buy bad license games playing good games, then I'm okay with it. But this just seems generic to begin with. And I mean, maybe just slapping the license on there, I'm confused.
Previews have been kind of iffy about it. I don't know. I've read previews, but I still really don't know much about it, except that, you know, it's a shooter and there's no Batman, but it's in Gotham City. And
yeah.
I know
there's a comic series that it's based on, but I can't see that being that great. I feel like it's going to be like the next Red Faction Battlegrounds. Just kind of, here's this game.
That game was a real winner.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that bad. That was the thing. The game was not in really any identifiable way bad. Just
but at the same time,
our desire to play it.
Yeah, exactly. I think while there's one news story I think it's worth mentioning. I don't know if anybody cares about it, but last week, Sony officially unveiled Starhawk.
Starhawk.
The follow-up to Warhawk.
Yeah.
Which I played a little bit of. It's a neat game, but I don't... I'm not... It's mostly an online-focused experience, and that's not something I'm really into, but do any of you care about it? At all?
I don't know. I mean, Warhawk in space? I can get behind that.
Yeah, I can definitely get behind that more than Warhawk not in space. So...
Yeah,
I can definitely get behind that in space. My issue is the online only thing. What if PS Single's down again?
I think
that was a bad time to announce it.
Yeah,
that's true. Of course, you know, it really would have gotten overshadowed at E3, so it's kind of the time to do it. If they knew they were going to deal with this PSN stuff right now and then barely be able to have that news cycle go away before E3, this is kind of the last time they can announce something that doesn't get overshadowed by whatever they happen to be talking about in June.
Yeah,
true.
I kind of about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was completely unfortunate, their thing with SOCOM 4 coming out 2 days before the whole blackout.
Yeah. Well, SOCOM got hurt. Brink definitely got hurt. You know, it is interesting to see them doing this online-focused thing again. Of course, I mean, they did MAG, which was clearly, you know,
That's one thing I was going to mention.
Yeah.
To go back to the free games thing, I'm surprised MAG wasn't one of them. I mean, hey, PSN is back. Here's a game that supports PSN. Just go crazy. You know?
I think people would have gotten mad with MAG.
Maybe.
Just because... It's already available to level, 8 for PlayStation Plus users for free?
Is it?
And everyone's going to get PlayStation Plus free for 30 days.
Is it available for free? I thought that was just a demo.
No, well, it's a demo, but you can play... It's not a timed thing. You can play up to level 7 or 8, I think.
Oh, okay.
And then it caps up at that. And you can keep playing, but you can't level up anymore. But I feel like people would have thought that was a little redundant to give that away both. If people haven't tried it, they should play up to level 7 or 8. I got into it a little, but it just seemed way too involved for me personally.
Yeah, I played the beta way back. It was kind of neat, but nothing special.
I was kind of wondering how a demo for something like that would work.
Yeah. When we come back, we will talk about what we've been playing.
Listening to the Snack Bar Games podcast, find us on the web at snackbar-games.com.
And we're back. And what we've been playing? Well, mostly we've been playing L.A. Noire. So we're just going to talk about that. Andrew, I know you've been playing it very, very recently. So why don't you start us off?
Just before we started recording, I just put down the controller in the middle of a pretty interesting case right now.
Yeah, I've been playing it some too. What are your initial thoughts?
It's definitely not a typical Rockstar game. Well, I mean, in some ways it is. You still have the open environment. You still have the same kind of mini map and free roaming stuff you had before, but you're playing as a cop, so you can't just, you know, go around on killing sprees or do anything crazy that you would in like Grand Theft Auto or Red Dead Redemption. But I think the way they restrain it like that makes it more relatable in terms of the story. It doesn't, because, you know, a big complaint people had about Red Dead Redemption was like, oh, John Marston is this really good guy. He doesn't care about killing, you know, innocents or doing any of these bad things. Yet you could be a complete outlaw in that game outside of the story. So, I mean, I think it kind of restrains that from happening in L.A. Noire, and it works, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the whole thing feels like you're supposed to be this detective that's very by the book, mm-hmm. and everything feels like it's forcing you to be by the book, which kind of increases the atmosphere and makes you feel more like... You know, you are a detective, and you need to walk the straight and narrow.
Yeah, exactly. You get penalized for, like, if you're driving and you hit any cars, or if you even run over any civilians, you get penalized by at the end of that specific case you're working on.
Yeah, I found that, you know, you can turn your siren on and go around, and
oh, yeah.
I find that pedestrians don't pay any attention at all to that. They just keep walking across the road, like, I need to get through here. And they just keep walking, like, oh, there's a car.
Yeah, that happened to me once. I was driving, sirens on, all the cars getting out of the way, but there's this one person who's just like, nope, I'm going to cross the street, I'll be okay. They weren't okay.
Yeah.
But, the investigation stuff is really, really interesting. I think, honestly, the thing I can compare it to most is, like, Phoenix Wright, which is strange, but
I was going to say, it seems like the largest, most ambitious, deepest Phoenix Wright game I've ever played. And that's basically what it is. You know, you go, you look around the crime scenes, you pick up things, you know, you interrogate people. I mean, it feels like they are making a Phoenix Wright game.
Yeah, mostly the interrogation stuff is what reminds me of Phoenix Wright. You have different questions you can ask each person based on their facial animations, which the facial animations live up to the hype. Very good.
Yeah, they're very detailed facial animations.
And you can definitely tell when someone is lying or hiding something. And you have three different options. You can go along with their story and continue to question them. You can kind of stray from see if they're straying from the truth, or you can just flat out accuse them of lying. And depending on which you pick, they'll either clam up and just stop talking to you completely, or they'll continue on with their story. You know, so it's kind of tricky, but the facial animations really help. And I don't think you could have done this game without them.
Yeah, well, certainly that system was designed based on the fact that they have these facial animations. Mm-hmm. My only issue with it is that there's a correct answer. You know, it feels a little awkward sometimes. Like, clearly, if you accuse them of lying, you have to have, you have to have evidence to back up, you know, you're lying, here's why. And that makes a lot of sense. That's really Phoenix Wright-like. But then there's the doubt option, which is all based on facial expression, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but if, say, you didn't happen to get the evidence and you choose doubt when the correct answer was to have gotten the evidence and said lie, then I feel like that's the best you could do in that situation, but it's still incorrect, you know. That isn't the correct response.
Even if you get it wrong, that's the great thing about it. Even if you do something wrong in the interrogations, the case still goes on and you can still, you know, figure out what that person was lying about. And, like, I was talking to a friend. We played one of the early cases in the game. I think it's the first case you do as the detective.
Yeah.
And there's a point where you interrogate someone. I completely botched the interrogation, but he got it completely right, and he solved the case right then and there. But I had a part where I had to tail him, follow him to his apartment, interrogate him some more. And I think, in a way, it's kind of weird to say this, but, like, if you fail some of these interrogations, you can open on more of the missions. But you'll never know. I think it's really intriguing in that way.
Well, I like the concept. I just wish it wouldn't, you know, say this is the correct answer, this is the incorrect answer.
You wish it were more open-ended?
Well, it reminds me a lot like Heavy Rain. Like, clearly there were options where if you had to get to the best ending, you had to choose these options as it went on. But it wasn't like you just chose the right option to get to the best ending. You know, like I mean, I know you can. I believe you can turn that off. But just the fact that I know that's there is just kind of awkward. Like, oh, you're going to get the incorrect part of the story. Hey, I'd rather just talk to them, see their reaction, listen to what they're saying, and then figure out if that was what I wanted them to do, you know?
Yeah, I kind of get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think they kind of work around it with the multiple paths in cases. So, I mean, I don't feel like I'm punished or I feel like I'm doing things absolutely correctly all the time. It's just, you never know until you get that final ranking at the end of the case. And
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's an interesting approach, but I do get what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, Sean, you're actually reviewing the game for us. You don't have it yet, but I know you're a really big, you know, Phoenix Wright guy. You're really into that kind of thing. So, I mean, what are you looking forward to most about, you know, what makes this game different? What do you really want out of this?
I definitely want a fully fleshed out Phoenix Wright type investigation style.
Yeah.
I would love it if the driving does not remind me of Grand Theft Auto, because I can't drive worth a flip in Grand Theft Auto.
I hate to disappoint you. Driving is like Grand Theft Auto.
You will run into cars,
you will run into people, and it's a problem because you're supposed to be a cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very strict. But the good thing is you can just have your partner drive. It's just fast travel. You don't have to do any of the driving in the game at all. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, so you, if you're with a partner, at a, like, I think about 2 hours into the game, you get the option to just hold down the Y button on the Xbox, and it'll let your partner drive, and it'll just fast travel to you to where you need to go. The downside to that is you won't get any, like, random police call-ins and cases. Like, sometimes you'll get a call saying there's someone robbing a bank, or there's someone who's beating up another guy, or there's a shootout or something, and you'll miss out on those, but they're not really they don't really impact the story at all. They're just kind of like side quests in a way.
And you can seek them out when you want to, but sometimes you just want to be able to get 3 blocks away without running over pedestrians. So
yeah,
exactly. It's good like that. Definitely more forgiving.
We'll see. It sounds like it'll be more intriguing to me than Grand Theft Auto has been. So perhaps I'll make myself get used to the driving.
Yeah, honestly, it's there's shooting, there's fighting, and there's driving mechanics, but they're not that. It's not the main focus of the game at all. It's safe to compare the game to an adventure game more than like Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, it just happens to basically use a similar engine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but so LA Noire will have more thoughts on that later. I don't know what else you guys have been playing, but I actually have been finishing up my review of Dream Trigger 3D.
I need to know more. What is this game exactly?
I have been playing it for a while there, and I'm having trouble answering that question. it's essentially, it's a shooter, but it's a three-dimensional shooter, but it's not really a three-dimensional shooter. It's the most convoluted thing I've ever witnessed. I won't say played, because I'm not sure I've gotten to that point yet. But what happens is there are enemies that are coming at you on the top screen. The top screen looks a lot like, I'm going to say, Child of Eden kind of, like, trippy lights, and, it's really strange. But the enemies are just these faint glowing dots. But then you have the bottom screen, where there's an indicator of where the enemies are on the bottom screen, and then you can tap, like, it's like a grid with squares on it, and you can tap the squares when they're lit up, and that will expose the enemy on the top screen so that you can move around with the analog pad and shoot with a trigger, and you shoot them that way. Otherwise, you can't hit them, but
that
they can hurt you.
Kind of complicated.
It's really complicated. I it's not personally a game for me, and that's been a little tough for reviewing it, but it feels like people who really are hardcore shooter people, who have gotten really good at that kind of thing, this is like a twist on that. It's something different, and you can't fault them for that.
So you compared it to Rez just in the visuals, or is it kind of music based too, or is it just visuals in terms of
it? Rez definitely has music cues.
Okay.
The sound sounds a little more Rez trance-ish, but as far as the cues, it reminds me of De Blob, where, like, when you hit things, when you do things, it makes a little riff,
mm-hmm.
in whatever style of the music you're doing, and it kind of builds up like that. It's essentially Rez plus this bottom screen thing, though a little less about the music, but it is immersive, and you definitely should play with headphones if you're going to play.
So does I take it the 3D adds a lot, or is it just kind of...
The 3D style is really pretty cool, okay. It's not like, a standard retro thing. It really is trying to immerse, and, each level has a different style, and you can, customize how things look, and there's a lot to that, and I think it's largely kind of a pattern memorization thing. There's a level, you play it a few times, you know how the enemies are going to spawn in for the next 3 minutes or whatever. And, then you... it's a little possibly kind of bit trip in that way, where you play it and then you kind of learn what it is you're going to need to do and, kind of perfect that run.
So is it a difficult game too?
It's really difficult.
Okay.
I say that as someone who's not necessarily good at those games, but it's really, you need to memorize patterns, and you can't do it on the fly, and it's tough, but it's interesting in a way that I haven't seen before, and for that, it you can kind of admire it in that way.
So it's good, just not your thing, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think even for people who it is their thing, it's not, like, relaxing. You know, it's not like the game you kind of, you know, it's not like your Tetris, your Chime, like you kind of get in the zone and then you just kind of, you know, zone out and do your thing. It's really, you got to stay tense the whole time, you know.
I know Jerry's a huge BitTrip fan, so.
I am. I don't
know. Anything to sound interesting to you at all?
Kind of does, just from the gist of what I'm hearing here. I don't know. I think I'd get into it, maybe.
If it's
more music-y.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, at least just, like, look up some gameplay videos and things like that. It's really, it's its own thing.
Who put this game out?
Well, D3 has published it. Okay. Art is the developer. When we come back, we'll get to our topic of the week, secrets.
Woo!
Find out what it is. Shh! It's secrets. All right, we'll be back. All right, we're back. And this time we're talking about secrets. Andrew, you just wrote this feature about how secrets have kind of gone by the wayside with the advent of the internet and all these things like that. Tell us what that's about.
Well, I think this definitely comes down to comparing the new Mortal Kombat to the older Mortal Kombat games. Because when I was a kid growing up, I loved the series, and I would always, like, local arcades that no longer exist now, but they had Mortal Kombat 2, Mortal Kombat 3 cabinets, and there was tons of secrets and Easter eggs, and, you know, every week that I went down there, I'd be talking to my friends and learning about these new things that I never knew about, and sometimes they were just making things up just to mess with me, sometimes right. They were actually real, and it was just so fun to always go into it and discover something new. And I mean, I think with the new Mortal Kombat, it's Just go to Google, go to GameFAQs, go to any gaming website, and look for, you can find videos of everything, you can find the list of all the secrets, all the unlockables, and it's kind of that mentality of putting secrets into games is either completely gone from some developers, or they just put them in how they normally do when they're discovered so easily, so it's not
right.
really secret anymore.
It kind of takes away the mystique of the secret, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and you mentioned, like, even things weren't true. There are always those famous rumors about secret characters you couldn't really unlock or, you know.
Yeah, you Mortal know? Kombat was definitely famous for that.
Right.
But now it's, you know, someone tells you a lie about a game, you'd be like, okay, Google.com, Mortal Kombat, this character that's supposedly in the game, nope, not true, okay. End of story. You don't spend time obsessively looking for this thing that you think is there. And
right, and in that way, it's not nearly as cool to be able to do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Even things like with Mortal Kombat, with, like, special moves people had and special fatalities, you know, like, you couldn't just go on the internet and look up this move list, you know? You just, like, wow, you know, how did you do that? That was really what made that game cool, I think.
Yeah, and even when you had the home versions of the original Mortal Kombat games, you know, learning all those fatalities, I mean, you could still get a list, but it wasn't as easy to acquire, and it required more patience and learning with those kind of games. Now you just have to go online real quick, and you can find a list of every fatality, every secret move, everything that you'd need to know about that game before you even play it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily saying it's a bad thing, it's just changed how games like Mortal Kombat, and even like stuff like NBA Jam, which I know you love, Graham.
Air Dog. That's all I'm saying. I don't care about, you can unlock the president. Yeah, you can unlock, like, Will Smith. Air Dog would not miss threes. You would be going down.
But it's just these secrets that you would normally find in games like those. You can find them. They're still there, but they're not. Are they really secrets anymore?
Right. I think, you know, a big way to look at it is if we think about all these secrets of clearly our youth, you know, all these famous like Justin Bailey or the Konami Code,
yeah,
or, you know, like we were saying, you know, unlocking like special people in NBA Jam. It's hard to think about codes like that in the past, you know, 10, maybe even 15 years, where it's like all these iconic secrets, you know. The fact that we remember them until now, it's kind of this fond memory of remembering when we could do that. You know, we've lost that in today's game industry.
Yeah, and I mean, for some people, it's a bad thing that they kind of miss that. For others, it's just like, oh, okay, games are still games to me. It doesn't really matter. The secrets never really mattered. But, I mean, I'm not sure how to feel about it. One hand, it's, you know, it's cool that I can just, like, go online and find out everything I need to know about the new Mortal Kombat. And, you know, I don't have to spend time searching for it myself. But on the other hand, it loses that sense of discovery, like, oh, there's this one move I didn't know about. Or, oh, if I knock this opponent into the pit at this point in the level, something will happen.
Right.
It's just weird to think how far we've come with that. I mean, I know Mortal Kombat is chock full of these things, but it's just not the same.
Yeah, Jerry, what are your thoughts on this?
I was thinking on that just now, and I don't know, it kind of reminds me of fighting games. Oddly, as that may sound, but not in the same like sense like finding secrets like you would in Mortal Kombat.
Mm-hmm.
But more like how nowadays, even though you don't have actual secrets when it comes to fighting games, there are secrets in the sense that if you get really good with a character, then there is kind of a similar sense when it comes to using a character and being able to do these long ass combos that you don't look these up online. You just practice and practice and practice, and eventually you figure out, hey, I can do this. Hey, I can do this other thing. And of course, you can always tell other people about them, or you can just, well, lie about it.
Yeah, well, I agree. There is that kind of thing, especially in fighting games like that, where you have that character that to most people, when they first turn on the game, just seems absolutely horrible. But that's clearly the best player in the game. You know, that's the best character. Just people don't know how to use him. Like, that reminds me of, like, in Soul Calibur, probably Voldo. Or, like, I've seen some really good Olimar players in Smash Brothers or something that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that one that seems so weird. Like, I can't do a thing when I use that character. But people who know how to use them are just amazing.
I know. It really is the same in sense, because I remember Voldo specifically, like, when the game first came out, how no one knew how to use them. Everyone trashed them, like, oh, he's such a terrible character. And years later, it's like, oh, who was the best character in the game? Oh, wait, it was Voldo.
Well, depends on which one you were playing. Clearly, on the GameCube version of Soul Calibur 2, we know the best character, right?
Of course.
Yes.
Link, run away, shoot arrows. You have the only ranged weapon in the entire game. Use it.
Also throwing bombs.
Oh, sure, bombs. Yes,
but I get what you're saying, Jared. It's kind of like you can find out all the secrets in the world in a fighting game, but if you want to learn how to be good with a character, you know, looking up videos on YouTube or something isn't going to help. You need to actually practice. So
I actually have a friend who obsesses over a certain fighting game that where he just constantly looking at videos on YouTube and trying to emulate what he does there. Versus my mentality, where I don't look up a single video on YouTube and just practice the hell out of a character and see what I can do with the character.
Yeah, so in that sense, that part of fighting games still isn't lost. So
yeah. I have to ask, though, Jerry, who wins usually?
I do. Mostly because he tries to emulate stuff that more often than not is a little too high level for him.
Gotcha.
Where sure he can pull it off on a static target in training mode, but when he's actually in the middle of a battle trying to do the move over and over, well, it doesn't quite always work out.
Sean, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm kind of torn on it. On one hand, I miss the secrets in games. On the other hand, I don't, because I never found them anyway. And so I don't have to worry about not finding out about one-third of the game or various different things you can do in a game. because I never discovered any of that stuff anyway.
I guess I just kind of missed the mythology, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even back to, like, the original Super Mario Brothers, where you're talking about, like, Minus World, and just, like, you know, and also, you know, slipping through that wall, through that one area you can get. For the longest time, I didn't think people could actually get through that wall and sneak through, but, you know, there aren't things like that now, and it's not just because games don't have that sort of structure anymore. Though a lot of that stuff does get patched out. That's sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but,
it is.
You know, I like just the mythology of there's totally this thing and you can always search for it, you know. Whereas now it's just, can you do this? You know, you look 3 minutes after the game's released online, there's a video, there's a how-to, you know, it's just...
Well, that does bring another thing where if you don't like being able to look up everything, then you can just be the one that discovers everything. that is what I do in some cases. Like it's one reason why I like buying games at release nowadays, even with usually some games going at half price like a week after they come out.
Right.
But just because at the time, even if you do want to look up for stuff in the game, there's usually hardly anything to look up because the game is brand new. So any hidden stuff among the like are still way hidden, and there is no one out there that can help you get them, well, unless you, of course, get them yourself.
Right.
I have to bring up something else, though. I mentioned in the column that there's also achievements and trophies and things like that that usually do come out before the games are even out. And I know there are ways of hiding, like, certain things, usually story-related things from people. Like, there's secret trophies, secret achievements that you can't get until you unlock them or until someone else unlocks them and posts about them. But do you think the invent of those kind of ruined what developers had going for these secrets?
I don't think so. If just because it really depends on how the trophy/achievements are implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say Uncharted 2, I really like that, and the first Uncharted 2, I really like that a lot of the accomplishments/trophies were implemented where if you got said thing, you would unlock further stuff in the game as opposed to just being an accomplishment that you could optionally go for.
Right. Well, and I know we can't get through an entire podcast without talking about Portal 2, so let's talk about Portal 2 for just a second. The way they implemented the achievements, and a lot of games do this, but it just seems the most iconic to me, is that they implemented these using the most vague names and descriptions possible, so that really it meant something to you after you got it, but it didn't really spoil anything before then.
Exactly. Like you can look through the achievement list for Portal 2 before you even start the game, and you won't have a clue about most of what happens in the game except you know, maybe certain little vague details that you can
like the last achievement, you know, in the single player game. The whole description is that just happened.
Yeah.
And it totally makes sense once you play it, but it doesn't spoil anything.
Well, there's that, and there's the achievement name, per se.
Yeah. Well, won't go into that. We won't be the people who do that. But
No spoilers, but it's very well done. I think more games should do that. I mean, a lot of achievements and stuff now are just like, I don't know, for a shooter, for example, you have kill a certain number of enemies with this weapon, or, you know, kill 3 enemies with a grenade, or things like that. But there are still things out there that, in achievements that kind of give away little pieces of games that otherwise you wouldn't know about.
Right.
I'm making a habit of not looking at achievement lists or trophy lists before games come out, at least not until I finish a significant portion of the game. But I used to be the kind of guy who would look up achievement lists ahead of time, even before games come out. And, you know, the first thing I would do when I pop in a new 360 game would be to look at the achievement list. But I'm trying to stop myself from doing that because I think it leaves more things open, you know, to what to expect. So, like, when I get a trophy or an achievement, I'll be like, oh, I didn't see that coming at all. That's neat.
Yeah. Well, that brings up an interesting issue, I think. Whereas before, you know, the whole idea with secrets is that there were things you couldn't find out if you wanted to. Now, if you try hard enough, at least most of the time, you can kind of put blinders on and just enjoy things on your own. But I think that's difficult. I mean, not just with achievements, but just hearing about the game, and especially with, we've talked about L.A. Noire, this is definitely going to be a game where spoilers are going to hurt everything.
Yeah, because
it's a story game. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very linear. I mean, I know you can go around the city whenever you want, and there's certain side missions, but it's generally really linear. There's no reason to explore unless you just like seeing the 1940s L.A. city.
Right.
But if you find out, like, oh, this happens in this case, then, you know, you'll already know exactly what's going to happen. You'll probably know what to look for, and I think it relates to Heavy Rain in that way. And, like, you know, there are certain options you can make and certain ways the story can go, but it won't. It's still, even if you find out one little thing, it still could ruin things for you.
Yeah, I guess my point is that, you know, Jerry, you were talking earlier about getting games as soon as they come out, and I think that's crucial in games like this, because especially with a big release like L.A. Noire, it's going to be so large of a presence in gaming culture for the next at least a few months. And it, more than many other games, it's going to be really tough to avoid, you know, plot points. Like, we can talk about the original Portal. It was short enough to the point where the iconic moments, if people didn't play that before it got to be such a ridiculous, you know, meme, that it really kind of ruined the experience. That playing that through the first time was really what was magical.
And I do know a few people who comment on how they would have enjoyed the game a lot more had they played it when it come out.
Right.
I don't know if it's the same case for Portal 2 exactly, but it's still, you know, if you find out what happens at certain plot points in Portal 2, it might, you know, I think it'll ruin at least some of the funny lines or moments in that game that would completely surprise you otherwise.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I don't think it's just, I think they've done a really good job with Portal 2 and the fact that there's not many things in that game that are really, that could be made into memes, and even if they do, I think there are a couple small ones. You probably won't get them until you actually play through the entire game.
Right.
So I think they've done a really good job with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it. This has been another episode of the Snack Bar Games Podcast, and see you next time.